Welcome to the Adventure Audio Podcast. In this episode, we are hosting Corey Wallace, who is from Jasper, Alberta, Canada, and he is a four-time 24-hour mountain bike race champion. So that's in the solo division. So that's not with a team like most people do 24-hour mountain bike races, which is the sensible thing to do. Corey races them solo, and he has been the best in the world at that four times. He's had some really, really epic battles in that, and so he's learned an awful lot about ultra-endurance sports and racing. And he tells us a whole bunch about all of that really cool stuff. But he's done a whole bunch more, and we get to hear a little bit about it. We could probably have Corey on a few times to hear about some of his wild adventures, but he was most recently in Africa. He had a much longer time there than he had expected because of some travel complications. So a really cool story there, where he ended up setting a fastest known time up Mount Kilimanjaro as well, and talk about making lemonade out of lemons. Like, a tough situation, and he made the best of it and was able to have a whole bunch of really cool adventures and training while he was there. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the State Bicycle Company, who you can visit at statebicycle.com. As we always tell you, the best thing you can do is just give them a quick follow on social media, and then you're going to know when they have cool parts apparel or bicycles coming out. They just launched an e-bike. I think it's just under $1,500 US. That's pretty crazy. So check them out at statebicycle.com and learn about their new e-bike. The podcast is also brought to you by Wheel Science. We're going to have Peter Coombe from Wheel Science back on, and we're going to ask him some more questions about high performance wheels and cost, actually, and how to make a decision based on some of that. So we've compiled a few more questions for Peter. We're going to have him back on to break down some more really important data about bicycle wheels, because of all of the bicycle parts, that seems to be the most confusing and that people probably make a lot of mistakes in and spend a lot more money than they need to on, or they're spending it on the wrong parts of the wheels, or maybe even on the wrong bike. So we're going to have Peter back on. But in the meantime, you can visit Wheel Science at wheelscience.com. You can use code ADVENTUREAUDIO, which will give you 10% off anything that they have in stock, or you can consult with them on what would be appropriate for you for a custom wheel build. That's it for now. Thank you again to Corey Wallace for spending some time with us. Thank you all of you for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Thanks for taking a few minutes to chat with us. So this has been, you're somebody that I've wanted to talk to for a long time, because I kind of followed some 24-hour racing, because I think it's pretty badass, and you've just won again. So that's super, super cool. But tell us a little more about your background to begin with. Let's start there. Like, you're from Jasper. Are you born and raised in Jasper, Alberta?
Yeah, I was actually born in McBride, BC, where my family has a little cabin.
Okay. But
we always lived in Jasper. And yeah, I grew up there playing hockey. That was kind of the main focus.
Like a lot of kids?
Yeah, that was it, the NHL dream. And then slowly that faded away, and I just enjoyed cycling a lot. So I did a lot of mountain biking, a bit of racing when I was younger, like in my late teens. And then when I finished high school, I went tree planting and did some other things away from cycling. And then wanted to get back into it. So I went down to South America with my bob trailer and toured across the continent. Wow. And that was kind of the foundation. And then keyed on a few races, like 24 Hours of Adrenaline in Canmore and La Ruta in Costa Rica, and had a couple good results. And then I was in contact with Kona Bikes, just saying like, hey, I'm keen to ride for you guys. Like, there's a marathon spot available at some point. I'd be stoked to get on. And yeah, that relationship grew over the years. They helped me out with the bike and some clothes, and entry to BC Bike Race 1 year. I could join the team for that. And then since then, it's just, expanding every year. And now it's a full-time career.
So how did you zero in on the 24-hour racing? Because it's such a leap from, like, going out your back door and riding hard with some friends for a couple of hours, right? Like, I can understand how you get into shorter track stuff, but it's, like, it's still kind of fringe. Like, racing for 24 straight hours is... it's pretty bonkers. No, and no matter how far you ride, you know that you're going to be in that pain cave for 24 straight hours, right? Like, it's pretty unique. So, like, when did you realize that you had a special ability to go for that long, that hard?
Well, one of my buddies, Dave McDowell, he ran the bike shop Freewheel Jasper, or Freewheel Cycling Jasper. And he was, yeah, always helping me out and sponsoring me. And he started doing these 24-hour adrenaline races in Canmore. And then he invited me to come one year. And I thought it was crazy. I was like, why would you do that? But at that time, I was tree planting May and June. So it would be like 2 months of pretty long days in the bush. And then it would take me a while to get my fitness back, especially for the short track racing. But the 24-hour racing is more of a mental diesel effort. So that actually worked out. Tree planting 2 months, did a little bike tour, and then was in the 24-hour race, I guess, 3 or 4 weeks later. And, I mean, it worked out pretty good. It was the World Championships that year, and I was sitting in the top 20, like, quite a ways back. And then a massive storm moved in, and a lot of the international riders froze up. And I kind of moved up the standings because other guys were pulling out. And then in the early morning, I was in seventh and not too far off the last podium spot in fifth. And yeah, I had a couple good adrenaline surges and actually caught fifth place in the last lap. And I mean, it was a horrific race. I went up and down and had sugar rushes. And I think I took in like 50 cups of caffeine. And I had no idea what I was doing and it felt horrible. But I had some sort of success. I thought, okay, like, if I didn't mess up so bad, I could probably do all right at this. So I just saw a lot of room for improvement. So that's it's like, okay, I want to do this again and straighten a few things out.
Awesome.
And that was in the 24-hour world championship?
Yeah. Okay. Back when 24 Hours of Adrenaline hosted it.
Okay. Got it.
And then
tell us what happened after that.
Yeah. And then I did a couple more races in Canmore. And one they call the national championships is just like whoever won that could get a flight to world championships in Australia. And I always wanted to go to Australia, so that was like my motivation. It's like, okay, it's got to go suffer for 24 hours and I'll go to this like dream location. So I ended up winning and went to Australia for the world championships. And that year, I think I finished second to Jason English. I had a shot at winning that year, but my pit stops, I didn't have that figured out yet. So I probably stopped for an hour total, and Jason stopped for, I think, 7 minutes.
Wow.
So he won the race by 45 minutes, and then myself and two other guys battled it out for second, and I ended up getting it by a couple minutes. Like, it was a battle to the end.
Wow. But then you realize that that's how slim the margins are at that level, right? That it's coming down to eliminating rest, essentially, right?
Yeah, you just don't stop. I mean, I feel like I was as fit as Jason that race. I just didn't have the experience. And he is so smart. He's raced so many of those. He knows how to gauge his efforts and his food, and he has it all dialed in. And I had the fitness, just not anything else.
But then you gained the wisdom, you came back, and you won it four times, right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it was just learning off Jason. Sure. I spent a lot of time racing him. We had a big battle in New Zealand in 2016, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
It went down in the last lap. And again, I felt like I probably let that one slip away due to poor nutrition the last few laps.
Mm-hmm.
My stomach totally went. And I mean, Jason was going for the seventh record or win in a row, so he was pretty motivated. Mm-hmm. But he was more ready to win that one than I was. But then after that, I finally broke his streak, and here we are.
Kind of broke through. It's crazy that a 24-hour race can come down to a lap. Like, that's
mental.
Because most of the participants in 24-hour racing are there to see if they can race for 24 hours. Right? Like, can I stay upright? Can I stay awake? And let's see how many laps I can do. But at the tip of the spear, like, you guys are, you know, 7 minutes. 7 minutes of stopping. Like, that is so crazy that you could be so neck and neck. Because you have to be so mentally in the game, right? Like, have you ever had something come down to a mechanical or a crash when it's come that close?
Not when it's that close. I have had big crashes and not too many mechanicals. But yeah, in that race in New Zealand, is down in the last lap, and I had to get in before noon so I could go out for another lap.
Right.
And I came in at 12 and like 30 seconds. Like I missed by half a minute. And Jason came in 11:57, so he went out for another lap.
Okay.
And then one of the course sponsors was like, hey, you can stop, like Corey didn't make it. And yeah, it was pretty intense.
So they went and found him, like they didn't let him complete the whole lap. They said
no. Like, they sent a radio message to one of the course marshals saying like, "Okay, you can stop him." Like,
wow,
Corey's not out. Yeah, I was pretty bummed on that one. I thought I should have had that one, but again, it's just technical mistakes. I'd say with my nutrition, and I didn't have it figured out yet. But then finally in Italy in 2017, all the pieces came together and it was a good course. I was able to lap Jason around 2 a.m. and then I got a good lead. Like it's probably one of my strongest races, but then my stomach went in the last 5 or 6 hours and I really had to go on a conservative, like just cruise around mode after that. And yeah, it was kind of an ongoing problem. Same in Scotland in 2018. We had a good battle going on with Josh Testado and Taylor Ledeen from the States, Jason English, and a couple of Europeans. And again, at midnight, my stomach went. And I was like, oh, man, my race is probably over. And I asked my pit crew to find some, like, French fries. Like, meat French fries. And they're like, no, we can't feed them French fries for 12 hours. But Candace, she found these little baked potatoes with oil and salt. And that's what I ate for the next 12 hours. They would just put them in my back pocket and they'd get all like, it was like mashed potatoes. It was a torrential downpour the whole race pretty much. And just stick my hand in the back pocket, pull out these mashed potatoes. It'd be like full of dirt and mud, but I just like,
did you
eat that one?
Did you ever think to yourself, what am I doing?
Yeah, you know what? When you're in the heat of the moment, it's just like, just one lap at a time, just get some fuel.
Sure.
Now when I think back and I'm like, man, that was not pleasant.
Oh, that's awesome. So you won one in Italy and one in Scotland, is that correct?
Yeah, and then Brazil in 2019.
Okay.
The Brazil marathon champ was there.
Okay.
And he went out super hard the first lap and had like a 7-minute gap on Taylor Ledeen and myself. But it was almost a relief when I saw he had that big of a gap. It's like, okay, he's going way too hard. So Taylor and I worked together for about 9 or 10 hours, kind of kept it close. And then Taylor, his leg cramped up and he had to pull out. And at the same time, the Brazilian guy had like a pretty massive meltdown. So I lapped him and all of a sudden there's a lap up at midnight. So I just kind of keep it steady the last 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
That was also a tough race. It was super hot. And again, my stomach went the last 4 or 5 hours. But yeah, thankfully I had a big lead, so I could just kind of cruise it in.
Yeah. So Brazil, then you had one more, right?
Yeah, then we lost, 2 years to the pandemic.
Sure.
Yeah. And then came back to Italy this year. And I kind of knew I had to fix my stomach out, because if it's a tight battle and the stomach goes, you're not going to come out on top.
For sure.
So I switched up my nutrition this year and finally nailed it. I think it was my most consistent 24 hour I've done yet.
Any tips for the listeners?
I went more of a liquid diet this year.
Liquid?
Yeah.
Okay.
The whole time or past midnight when your sort of usual like problems started to occur?
No, the whole time. Wow. And I did mix in some food, and in the past I've relied on like one nutrition sponsor. This year I switched up between, I guess, 3 different nutrition companies and my own homemade stuff. And that seemed to work, just not overloading in one thing. But yeah, mostly liquid, bit of food to keep the stomach happy. But yeah, it went really well, and thankfully stomach didn't go, because I had a good battle with an Italian guy, Marcello. None of us really knew of him. He comes from more of a triathlon background. So the first 6 hours, we had like a pretty big group of like 5 to 7 contenders. And there's 2 Europeans out in front. And we're just waiting for the European guys to detonate. It's pretty normal. Like, guys will go up fast for 9 or 10 hours, and then that's it. But yeah, Marcelo never gave up. And at one point, he had a 16-minute lead. And then I thought, okay, this is getting a bit out of control. So yeah, I hammered out like 3 fast laps and caught him, and then attacked him right away. And I thought he'd mentally crack, but he didn't. I got like a 10-minute lead, and then it started to come back down. With 4 hours to go, it was just like 6 minutes. And I was like, oh man, like, I have Unbound to race next week, and I want to not battle to the end in this one. But yeah, I kept it steady, and luckily he finally came apart a bit towards the end. But yeah, I was mentally preparing myself for another all-out sprint for the last lap, which is, it's a lot to think about 20 hours in when you're pretty, pretty tired, but thankfully it didn't come down to that. But yeah. So I think,
how are you receiving info? Do you have a pit crew who are like radioing to you and telling you what the lead gaps are and stuff, or are you just finding out every time you come through like the stadium?
Yeah, I mean, I had to talk from the pit crew at the start of the race, just saying like time gaps. I need to know the exact time, like don't sugarcoat it or whatever. Just say like what the time is, and I'll adjust in my head what I have to do, how hard to push, and because a lot of the race just managing your speed, pacing yourself.
Yeah.
So I know, like, okay, the pace I'm going, I can up it, but do I need to? Or, okay, now I am at my limit. Like, so yeah, that was an important part of the whole race is time gaps. So every lap, they'd tell me, okay, this is what's going on. And I'd adjust my speed or tactics to that.
That's awesome. And not only are you good at like the 24 hour, you know, you're a 2-time Canadian, marathon champion, which is what, that's about a 4-hour race typically. Is that right?
Yep.
Corey? Yeah.
Yeah. It's supposed to go to 80K, four hours.
Awesome.
Yeah. I've won that a couple times. And then.
And you also won the BC bike race, I saw.
Yep. Won BC bike race in 2016.
That's great.
And
so, yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I'd love to hear about your ride up and the whole story behind your ride up Kilimanjaro, kind of how that all worked. You went down to the Cape Epic race and ended up spending something like 15 months on the road. And
yeah,
you went up Kilimanjaro the fastest ever on a bicycle.
Crazy adventure in Africa, though, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to hear a bit about that. A couple botched dentist appointments at I got a couple of infections, so I had to stay long in South Africa.
Oh.
That was after the Cape Epic. And then once the dental appointments were done, I was going to go home. Then the Omicron variant came, and all the flights got canceled, so I was stuck there for 3 weeks. So I did a couple of races in the meantime to pass the time. And finally, the flights were opening up, but you had to go through a third country to get a PCR test because Canada wouldn't accept the ones from South Africa.
Okay.
So it meant like a multi-$1,000 tick to go through Ethiopia, go into a Civil War country, get a PCR test, come out, get to Canada, quarantine 2 weeks, blah, blah, blah. Or the alternative was to go to Tanzania, to Zanzibar. And that counts as quarantine because they didn't report their COVID numbers.
Okay.
So they were considered a green country. So everyone was going to Zanzibar to party for 2 weeks. And then they'd be accepted to go home, which is ridiculous, but that's the way it was. So I took that route, and I had a flight home December 28th, but I was enjoying my time in Zanzibar, so I canceled that ticket and opted to bike towards Kilimanjaro. One of my friends she randomly mentioned, like, oh, you're in Tanzania, you're going to go up Kilimanjaro. And I thought, yeah, why not? It's a good idea. So I did some research, and then Apadir bike packing bags, they're a sponsor of mine. They sent some bags down, and then I load up my Kona race bike and started bike turning towards Kilimanjaro. And the original plan was to do a sea to summit, and then just go straight up in one day. But I got distracted on the way, and it took me like 3 or 4 weeks to get to Kilimanjaro. I just kept finding these amazing riding areas up in the east side of Tanzania. And then I eventually got to Kilimanjaro, I was trying to figure it out, do a one day attempt on it. But you have to have a guide and porters and the whole ordeal. And the minimum permit length is 5 days. So I thought, okay, if I'm paying for 5 day permit, I'll go up in 4 days, come down, and then the last day I'm going to try this FKT. So we went up, hit the summit on day three, started coming down. And then the plan was to leave the guide up in the mountain and I'd descend down to the base camp, park entrance, spend the night, and then come back up. But they want to have a guide with you the whole time. And that wouldn't work because, like, the most of guides are on, like, bikes in the 1990s, like V-brakes. And they're really strong trekkers, but they're really new to mountain biking. So it just, it wasn't an option. But eventually we negotiated with the park rangers and they let me descend down by myself. Spent the night at the ranger station. And then the next morning, got up at 7 and went for the FKT. I met my guide at 4,400 meters. From there, you have to hike up this steep, like the cone of the volcano. So he joined me for the hike bike section, hit the rim, and he stayed there, and I biked around the rim to the top, tagged it, came back down. And yeah, it was pretty awesome. We picked the best day all year. Like sunny and plus 6 up top, and almost 6,000 meters. And yeah, it was ideal conditions. So yeah, anyway, it was pretty awesome. It's one of those special days where everything just felt good and all the pieces fell together. Looking back at everything had to line up to make that work, it probably wouldn't work again just with all the logistics. But I had luck on my side and yeah, it was a good experience.
What's it like riding your bike at 19,000 feet?
It's just all in the lungs.
Sure, yeah.
You're pushing like 150 watts probably, but your lungs are exploding.
Yeah. And then, and you did, so it was a round trip. So from base camp up to the top and then back down. And you did it like 5 minutes under 9 hours, something like that, right?
Yeah, I left at 7 a.m. It was 7 hours up.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So you flew down.
1 hour 55 down, is that right?
Wow.
Yeah, something like that.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, typically a mountain bike route either, right? I mean, it's a trekking route. So what kind of terrain were you on?
Well, it's weird. It starts on a four-wheel drive road.
Okay.
That goes up for, I think, 15K. Mm-hmm. It's like their safety road to rescue riders, or rescue trekkers. And then from there, you hit 10 kilometers of single track, which is rideable. And then it's a 2 or 3 hour hike bike up the cone. It's this really steep scree and then it gets pretty rocky at the top. So that's all hike bike, just over 1,000 vertical meters.
Wow.
And then it's about another kilometer or two along the rim, which is about half rideable, half walking. And then coming down, you can ride most of it except for the top of the rim. It's too steep and rocky. It's about 20 minutes you have to hike a bike. So I wouldn't say it's like the best bike ride, but it's doable.
I love it. I love it. And then you go from doing that to, like, you know, the 24-hour mountain bike world championships to, like, racing in Unbound to, like, jumping in these shorter mountain bike races. You're doing the Lifetime Series, right? So, like, some of your races are what? 2-3 hours.
Yeah, Sea Otter's just over 3.
Yeah, wild.
About 2.
So you kind of do it all.
Yeah, it's just kept me in the game so long. It's just mixing it up.
I like it.
And the shorter events aren't my specialty, but they really help the longer events, the top end.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, you want to talk about the Lifetime Series? How's that going? So you've been doing really well so far.
Yeah, I think I'm sitting 17th overall.
Great.
So yeah, Sea Otter was good. I think I finished 19th in that race. Caught it like 10 riders in the last lap. But it was such a high octane race after bike turning around after all winter.
Sure.
So I felt good, but it was like the speed's a different level there. A lot of fast guys.
But you get to pick which, like, there's a minimum number of events you need to do, but you can pick what they are, right? And then it's cumulative results.
Yeah. So it's best 5 out of 6.
Okay. 5 out of 6.
Okay. But then at Unbound, I thought that was going to be my drop event because it was a week after Worlds, 6 days right. after.
6 days after, and those and the Worlds were in Italy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean,
nice, recovery, nice job.
Just get like crazy yeah. that you did that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't expecting much, but the recovery and everything went pretty ideal, and I actually felt really good in the race morning, and was in the lead group until mile 80, 85. It was like 20 of us, 25 of us left. And then after the first speed zone, there's a bunch of attacks, and I just couldn't get back on. And the body, that effort just shut the body down. And I went backwards for the next 6 hours. My heart rate wouldn't go above 100. It's just like lights out.
Yeah.
So the fatigue caught up to me. So yeah, it was kind of be expected. I was hoping for more, but it's the way it is.
Hey, just being on the start line is pretty impressive, I would say. So nice job. Yeah. And I saw that I saw your schedule. You're going to be doing Pete's race.
We're going to be seeing you in August, which is pretty exciting.
What is that? Early August.
Early August, August 6th and 7th. Corey's going to come and race the mountain bike and the gravel races. And you have like a packed schedule. Like you're, I think okay. after you're down in Crow's Nest with us, you're
in.
Is that right?
Yep. After that, I go to Leadville, down in Colorado for Leadville 100.
Yeah.
And, yeah, to be honest, the mountain bike race, for sure. Now I think the gravel race, it might be a game time decision.
Okay.
Bullets left for Leadville. So not we'll have
bad,
to see.
A bad call.
Yeah, we'll have to see how the body is at that time of year. Because those look like two solid events back to back.
Yeah, they're long, tough rides. I mean, obviously, well within what you do, but you are managing a really, really packed race schedule. Like you have to, you obviously have to consider how you're recovering while you're traveling too, right? Because every travel day is not exactly easy, right? Like, are you driving all the way down through into Colorado?
I'm thinking that when I will drive down.
Yeah.
Just looking from Crow's Nest Pass, it's about 16, 17 hours. And it just makes a bit more sense than driving back to Calgary. And the flights are pretty hit and miss these days. I find there's a lot more delays than normal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's easy to, yeah.
Pricey.
And so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. I know. I think driving works and you can kind of stop and ride along the way. There's lots of cool spots.
Yeah. No, I've heard it's a nice drive. So I'm kind of looking forward to that.
Well, I think it's awesome what you're doing. You're real like bike adventure. You do it all, you know. Growing up, I mean, number one, I think where you grew up, Jasper, is just an amazing place. I did a charity bike ride there in like 2011 on the Icefield Parkway. And Jasper is just an insanely beautiful spot. And if Jasper is now the new official start to the Great Divide mountain bike route, right?
Yeah, that's where the official start is now.
Not to the Tour Divide yet, right?
The Tour Divide still starts in Banff.
Okay, yeah. And so that was my next question. I think that's got your name written all over it, the Tour Divide someday. Right, Pete?
Long days, comfortable bike packing, comfortable sleeping on the ground.
Totally. Yep.
All the boxes, man, like to be able to rock that race. You need to think about that 1 year for sure.
And officially, you started your first event in cycling was just bike packing, really, right? In South America. So
yeah. No, it's been kind of on the radar a little bit. You just have to kind of commit that summer to the Tour of the Divide.
Totally.
Someday, yeah. Someday. Maybe.
It rules other things out, like near it and during it, right?
Yeah. And it's also weather dependent. Like, I was watching the guys do it this year, and it looks like a total gong show with the snow and the blizzards and stuff.
It's been another tricky year. Yeah, a lot of evacuations, hypothermia, broken bones. I read a quote from the Fernie, like, fire and rescue or something like that. And they said that a lot of the riders weren't prepared for the conditions just because it was so cold. It was rainy, blizzarding on the mountain peaks. Brutal. I think they had like 10 evacuations.
Yeah. Well, I think that's going to go pretty light ride because it's like, you want to go light for that kind of effort, but when you get stuck in that weather and you're screwed,
then you're in trouble. Yeah.
Yeah. And you can't just go knock on a door for help either. Like, it gets pretty remote pretty fast in a lot of spots. So here we are trying to talk you into doing it, and then you're but I feel like you have the makeup to do really, really exceptionally well in a race like that. So think about it. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's definitely on the radar. And the BC Epic's another one that looks pretty cool.
Yeah, shorter. Like, you probably, it's 1,000K, right? So you probably have that done in, sounds crazy saying it out loud, but probably 2.5 or 3 days, right?
Yeah, I think Rob Britton's doing it right now, and he's trying to break 2 days.
Wow.
It's a bit different route because they can't go over Gray's Pass because all the snow.
Right.
I'm not sure if it's longer or shorter, but I think, yeah, he's aiming for under 2 days. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he ends up there. So, yeah.
I know Kona's one of your big sponsors. Do you have any other sponsors you want to give a shout out to?
Yeah, I mean, Kona's been behind me for years.
That's great.
Over a decade now. And
yeah.
Through them, we have like Shimano, Maxxis, Fox. Nice. And they look after it all. So it's pretty awesome. Being lucky to be on board with them.
That's great.
So yeah, without their support, they give me the freedom to make my own schedules and just basically whatever I want to do, I can do. So it's pretty lucky.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think Kona put together the film Something to the Moon or something. I just saw that. It was I don't know if Kona put together or not, but it was really good. Exciting how you tried to do the double Everest, and you know, chapeau to you for that was insane to watch. Yeah. And I'm sure without the heat and smoke, I'm sure it would have been a little bit easier for you.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. The course I had was really hard, really steep, but it was fast to descend. But as soon as anything went offline, it's really hard to manage any speed. And yeah, the smoke and the heat in my stomach went in that one. So it was a combination. I'd like to try it again, I think.
I think you should, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll see.
But I like what you said. You know, you kind of, you know, you shoot for the moon, and you know, you still achieve good things. You set the new Everesting record, what, off road record? Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a kind of the unofficial mountain bike Everesting. Yeah. I don't think many guys have tried it, but it was kind of a yeah.
Yeah, but the ones who have tried it are really, really, really strong cyclists. So for context. Exactly. Nobody's trying that unless they're really, good. Really strong. So,
yeah.
So where can people follow along with you? Is Instagram the best place to find out some of the adventures as they're happening?
Yeah, that's the best one. Yeah.
Wallace World?
At Wallace World, yeah.
Awesome.
And then goes on the Facebook, and the Kona Cog is a good spot too over on Kona World. And then I have a website as well. CoreyWallace.com. That's not as up to date as Instagram or the Kona Cog.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, we're going to make sure we can share all those links so people know where to follow along with you. Well, I'm going to get to meet you in person in August, so I'm really looking forward to that, man. Thanks for doing this. We had a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, no, I'm glad it finally worked out, and thanks for the patience and that.
Oh, we did it, man. Hey, be well, race safely, and we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, good luck. Yeah, good luck this weekend and the rest of the season. Nice to meet you, Corey.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, guys.
Thanks.
Another big thank you to Corey Wallace for spending a little bit of time with us, and hopefully somebody that we can catch up with again soon. We might see Corey taking a podium spot at the race that I have the pleasure of directing and have co-founded, which is called the Crow's Nest Pass 100 in Alberta. He's going to be there on the first weekend of August. So we have mountain bike racing on August the 6th and a gravel race on August the 7th on separate routes. You can check that out at crowsnestpass100.com, like 100.com. Thank you everybody for listening. And if you're able to give us a like or a positive rating or review, or please subscribe if you haven't done so already. A subscription helps us actually reach new listeners because of the way that podcast algorithms work. So that actually exposes us to people who might like our show. So if you're able to do so, we really appreciate that. And we'll be back next week.